Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I hope there are enough of Koros. You could look on, and I'll get some more copies later. The topic I wanted to discuss today is one that has bothered me for a long time, which is that there are multiple instances of deception in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. In the Parshios that we've been reading over the last couple of weeks, and specifically, there are, I think, three instances of deception, misleading, even lying, that take place in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The first and the most overt is the one that we're all familiar with, the request to leave for 3 days. Hashem tells Moshe to ask Paro that Klal Yisrael leave Egypt for 3 days, and of course we know that that was not their intention. So why lie? Now, the truth of the matter is that we have to specify what our question is. I don't think anyone would say that lying under such circumstances is usur or is immoral. After all, imagine if someone is kidnapped and their captor puts them into the basement and they're tied up in the basement for years, and they say, you know, Mr. Captor, I'd like to go for a walk around the block, but I'll come right back. Is that okay? And he says, sure, just make sure you come back. And then you go for a walk around the block, and you quickly run away, you run to the police, and you save yourself. So I don't think anybody would say that that's a questionable, halachically, ethically, morally. So if it's necessary for the Jewish people to lie in order to escape, so then we would certainly say that it would be okay. After all, they were unfairly being enslaved, persecuted, and therefore to go ahead and say, can we just go for 3 days and then quickly run away? So that would certainly be okay. So our question isn't here, why is this justified ethically? The question is, Hayad Hashem Tiktzar, why was it necessary? After all, they weren't escaping al pi derech hateva. They were leaving the Nisim, the Niflos, there were 10 plagues, and therefore the question is obvious, why should this be necessary? And if you look when the Rishonim addressed this question, that's exactly how they ask it. The Ran, when he asks this question, he says, Hayad Hashem Tiktzar, why was this necessary? The second issue, instance of deception, it concerns the borrowing of Kalim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks Moshe to ask Klal Yisrael, Yishalu, Isha Meisrei Usa, man from his neighbor, woman from her neighbor, Klei Chesef uChlei Zahav. Now, what does Vayishalu, Ish Meisrei, what does that word mean, She'ela? So, the simple understanding is that it means to borrow, meaning to say that they asked to borrow Kalim, and when you borrow something, the implication is that it's going to be returned. And therefore, here too, we have another example where they lied. They asked to borrow Klei Chesef v'Klei Zahav, and of course they never returned it. They left. Now, to be sure, not everybody agrees that that is what Vishalu means. For example, if you look at the bottom of footnote 1 on page 1, Rasag says, V'she'ela tekabel b'matana. And he always translates, Vishailu v'yakablu. And the Rashbam brings Rayos that this is an appropriate translation of the word She'ela. This is also the view of the Chezkuni, and it's quoted in Ravenu Bachya. So there are those that would deny that this is an example of deception. However, I think the simple understanding of the word She'ela is indeed to borrow. That is the way the Ibn Ezra understands it. It sounds like Rashi understands it that way. The Gemara and Sanhedrin, Sadi Aleph, Amud Aleph understands it that way. And again, the question is why? Now here too, we can perhaps say it's justifiable technically. After all, the Jewish people were enslaved for a long time. They were never paid for their work. And therefore, they're simply taking their just compensation. So that this isn't technically stealing. There are times where if somebody owes you money and they refuse to pay, that you're allowed to be toe-face. And perhaps that's exactly what the Jewish people are doing here. The Gemara, again, quoted in footnote 1, raises this possibility. There's an interesting question whether, if you are owed money, if this is the best way to do it. Also in footnote 1, you'll see that the Zohar, which is quoted by the Ktos HaChoshen, writes that it's better not to do this. You shouldn't abuse a person's trust. If somebody goes ahead and owes you money, so you could go ahead and they're refusing to pay, so take it. But don't say, oh, could I borrow this and then keep it? That abuse of trust is inappropriate. And the Ktos actually concludes, V'lachein bal nefesh yarchik mizeh. So this too, though, even if we justify it ethically and we say that it was appropriate for them to take the keset, the zahav, because they were being compensated for their enslavement, but here too we have to ask, Hayad Hashem tiktzar, why was it necessary? Why do it in such a low-handed fashion? If the Jewish people wanted compensation and they were entitled to compensation, let them say, give it to me. You owe me this money. And if not, there'll be an 11th plague. Right? Why is it necessary to borrow and to deceive? So that's a second example of deception. And the third example is found in the parsha we just read. The Jewish people leave Mitzrayim in the beginning of Parshas Beshalach, and Hashem tells them, return and head back to Mitzrayim. And therefore, Paro will think, Nebuchim heim ba'aretz, agar aleim amidbar, the Jewish people are lost. And this will cause him to chase after the Jewish people and pursue them and set up Kriyas Yamsuf. Now, this example of deception is, in a sense, less troublesome than the first two, because we didn't actually say anything that was false, as opposed to the example of the 3 days, where we said, let us go for 3 days, and the example of borrowing the kalim, where we said, let us borrow kalim. In those cases, we're actually lying. In this third case, we didn't actually say anything. We are misleading Paro. So this third example is perhaps somewhat less problematic. But again, we have to wonder why it's necessary. And in light of the first two, it does seem to fit into a general pattern. So that's the question that we're going to discuss today. The first approach I'd like to see with you is that of the Ramban. The Ramban only addresses the issue of the first instance of deception, namely the 3 days, and he gives a fascinating explanation. He writes, the Amar Od, we'll read from the underlined text on page 1, the Amar Od, Mi anochi ki otiyas bnei Yisrael me'aretz Mitzrayim, kemo she'amarti li u'halosam el aretz Kanan, Kiam chacham v'navon ha'gai ha'gadol hazeh, v'lo yachshivuni laleches acharai el eretz amim gdolim v'atzumim mehem, kasher amarta laloso el eretz tova rechava el makom haknani. Moshe Rabbeinu was initially asked by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take the Jewish people out of Egypt, and he offers a number of reasons why Klal Yisrael would be hesitant, would not listen to him. So one of the issues that Moshe raises here, according to the Ramban, is he says that the Jewish people are a smart people, and they'll never agree to follow me if I tell them that we're going to the land of Canaan. They will know, after all, that the land of Canaan is inhabited by great and mighty nations. In fact, we see on several occasions that the Jewish people, after already having left Egypt, said, let us go back to Egypt. We can never do this. We can never make it to the land of Canaan. And therefore, the Ramban says, they certainly would have never agreed to leave in the first place had Moshe told them what their ultimate destination was. In other words, the Ramban says, quite a fascinating idea, the purpose of the deception, the purpose of the request for 3 days, was not for Paro. It was not in order to mislead Paro. It was in order to get the Jews to leave Egypt, because otherwise they never would have agreed. They would have thought, this is crazy. We can't leave. We'll never succeed in conquering the land of Eretz Yisrael. So when were they to be told? So the Ramban says Hashem says, that's what it means, Tavdun Asalokim Bahar Azek. Remember, at the Sne Boer Ba'esh, Hashem tells Moshe that this is a sign that I've sent you. You're going to receive the Torah at Har Sinai. It's at that point that the Jewish people will have sufficient trust and faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they would follow him to Eretz Yisrael. But until that point, Klal Yisrael thought that they were returning to Egypt, or at the very least they were going to stay in the Midbar, they weren't going to go into Eretz Yisrael. Now, there are some technical issues in terms of reading the Psukim. When did he tell them? Obviously, it was more than 3 days later. When exactly did they figure it out? There are times when Moshe refers to their plan to go to Eretz Yisrael. Maybe that doesn't mean immediately. Maybe that means later. So there are some technical issues to work out in terms of how exactly one would read all of the Psukim according to this Mahalaleh. But basically, that's the Mahalaleh of the Ramban. So the Ramban suggests, to summarize, that the purpose of the request for 3 days was for Klal Yisrael, so that they would agree to leave Egypt. Now, it's true, we know that this was, Bnei Yisrael's leaving Egypt was one of the great acts of Mesiras Nefesh and Bitachon, Lechtech Acharai Bamidbar, Be'eretz Lo Zeruah, and this is also a theme that the Ramban himself stresses in many places. But still, to go and capture the land of Canaan, that would have been something inconceivable, and therefore, at least initially, to gain the following of the Jewish people, Moshe requests from Paro 3 days vacation, so that therefore Klal Yisrael would follow. That is Ramban's answer. The next approach on page 2 is a fascinating approach as well, also very creative. It's from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky in the Emes Liakov. And he suggests the following. He says, after all, the Jewish people were leaving Egypt after 210 years. And many of the Kadmonim explain that Klal Yisrael was really supposed to be in Egypt for 400 years. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu chishev es haketz, he hurried it up because they couldn't possibly remain in Egypt for that long. They would have totally assimilated or been unworthy of redemption, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu hurried it up. Now, the Rabbi Yaakov suggests the following. When Hashem tells Moshe initially to ask for 3 days, that was actually the plan. The plan was as follows. The plan was a Shabbaton, 3 days, a weekend retreat, a time of spirituality and the Nizbach, Hashem Elokeinu, and Chizuk, and the like. Klal Yisrael would go into the Midbar for 3 days. They would be inspired, they would be moved, they would be motivated, they would return to their roots, and they would be able to then return to Egypt and remain there for the remainder of the Galus for an additional 190 years. And this would prevent their assimilation, for their sinking, would prevent them from sinking to the 50th level of Tumah, and therefore they would be able to serve out the rest of their term. That was indeed the request. So the initial request for 3 days was indeed genuine. What happened? What happened was as follows. Paro said no. He refused. And he says, there's no way this is happening, which caused there to be a need to bring the Makos, and basically the situation escalated to the point where it would have been impossible for the Jewish people to stay in Egypt for the duration of the 400 years. And therefore, it was necessary for them to leave entirely. He suggests that's why it was necessary for the Shibud to then become harder. Paro's refusal to allow the Jewish people to give them the straw, they had to gather their own straw, things became much worse, and basically the plan changed. And plan B was, well, since Paro had refused the 3 days, it was necessary to leave entirely. But at least had Paro initially said yes, they would have gone for 3 days and returned. Yes.
It answers the question, but it doesn't really work well with the Pesukim. The Pesukim mm-hmm. seem to be mashma. One cannot ignore the fact the Pashas is Ve'ir La'atilam Yad Mitzrayim La'osom in the Eretz Ahil Eretz Tova or Chava.
Moshe is talking to Paro, to Hashem is talking to Moshe at the burning bush, he tells him about the plan of leaving permanently. It's a good question. So either it is difficult for the Pesukim. Either you'll have to say that this reflects divine foreknowledge. God knew that Paro was going to say no.
But it was his kavanah in the first place. Even if he knew, it was his kavanah to bring him.
Alternatively, you have to say that that's talking about in the long term or eventually.
It's not Pashas and Pesukim.
I agree. It's not the Pashas and the Pesukim.
Okay.
But you're right. This is a difficult shot. It's also going to be difficult because, as we'll see shortly, we'll wait there in a second. The third approach is from the Abarbanel. I don't know if it's inappropriate to say this, but it's interesting. You know, the Abarbanel was, I don't want to call him a politician, but he was involved in government. He was a high-level government official. In fact, at the time of the Jewish exile from Spain in 1492, he was exempt because of his important government position. He refused to take the tour, and he left. But the Abarbanel was someone very familiar with how governments work. And he offers the following suggestion. He says that perhaps the pshat is as follows. Really, Moshe never really had this in mind. The purpose was to leave permanently. However, the request was to show how obstinate Paro was. It was to show how difficult, how impossible he was, such that even when they requested something that was quite reasonable, 3 days, that's it. We just want to go for 3 days. You're afraid we'll leave? Send out your army with us. Right? Not an unreasonable request. Despite the fact that the request was reasonable, you know, we've been slaves for a long time. We never got a single vacation. We're just asking 3 days. And still Paro said no. So that showed the world how cruel, how unreasonable, how obstinate he really was. And it was to make a point. What I said before, maybe it relates to Abarbanel's position. And everybody knows in politics, this is something you do all the time. You have negotiations. If you know somebody can't say no to something, can't say yes to something, so you make a request in such a way that makes them look really bad, right? That way you get a lot of leverage in negotiations. So that's really the purpose. The truth is that pshat, you can't say it really relates to Abarbanel's government position, because the Ran, Abarbanel's Rebbe actually, makes the same suggestion. He rejects it, but Abarbanel's actually getting it from the Ran. But anyway, that's the Abarbanel suggestion. So the Abarbanel suggestion was, of course, their intention was to leave forever. You could still question whether this is ethical or moral, but his point is, it's not a chisaron of Hayad Hashem Tiktzar, because the purpose wasn't really as a means to escape. The purpose was to make an important point, which is, who was Paro? Why is it that we have to run away? Because if Paro was this nice, reasonable guy, and one might wonder, hey, why is he being treated so terribly, and why all these plagues, and who knows what? But once it was clearly demonstrated how unreasonable of a person he was, so then Klal Yisrael's exit was much more understandable. That is the explanation given by the Abarbanel. We should note, by the way, that all three of these explanations, at least so far, only deal with the first instance of deception, not numbers 2 and 3. The Ksav HaKabbalah adds, based off of this pshat, that this would explain why the request for 3 days was only made initially. Because once that point was demonstrated, once it was made clear that Klal Yisrael was dealing with this unreasonable person, so then there was no need to continue to ask for 3 days. So they made the request for 3 days at the beginning. Paro said no. The point was proven. it was clear that Paro was unreasonable, and then they no longer made that request. Now, the problem with this explanation is the following, that it doesn't really go with the psukim. The psukim make it clear that Paro all along thought that they were leaving for 3 days. In other words, they never clarified, okay, well, you didn't agree to 3 days, that's it, we're going forever. How do you know that? Well, first of all of the requests that Paro continuously makes show that. Paro says, okay, you could go, but leave your children, right? Now, what did Paro think, they were going to leave forever and leave their children? No. It's because Paro said, you claim you're only leaving for 3 days. Well, I want to take your children as collateral and make sure that you don't leave permanently. But it was never made clear to Paro that they were actually intending at that point to leave forever, which is why he continued to assume that. And that's most explicit at the beginning of Parshas Beshalach, what we just read. The pasuk says, this is at the bottom of page 2, Vayugad lemelech Paro, ki barach ha'am, vayefeich levav Paro vavadav el ha'am, vayomru mazos asinu ki shilachnu es Yisrael me'abdeinu. What happens? Paro, after the Jewish people have left, was told ki barach ha'am, that the nation had fled. What do you mean he was told that the nation had fled? He was the one that said, say! He was the one that said, get out of here! Leave, 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 right? Yeah. Paro in pajamas in the middle of the night. He was telling them to leave. So what does it mean? He was told that they left. He knew that they left. Elamai, it's clear that what the psukim mean is that he was told that they left forever, meaning to say that they hadn't honored their agreement to return after 3 days. And Rashi amplifies this point. Rashi says that Paro had sent messengers with them, and the messengers accompanied them for 3 days. And when they didn't return after 3 days, as they had agreed, the messengers returned to Paro. And that's what the psukim say. Vayugad lemelech Paro, lemelech Mitzrayim, ki varach ha'am. At that point, Paro was informed that the nation had escaped. So it's clear that until this point, at the very least, Paro was hoping they would return. Now, of course, Paro wasn't a dummy, and he knew that there was a chance that they wouldn't honor their word, and that's probably why he sent those shluchim, and that's why he kept on insisting, well, keep your animals here and keep your children here and the like. So Paro, it's not like Paro hadn't considered the possibility of escape, but at the same time, you see that until that point, Paro was at the very least hoping that they would return. And therefore, even if it's the case that Klal Yisrael only explicitly requested 3 days at the beginning, it is also clear that Paro's understanding was that the request of 3 days was continuous, that they had never changed their official claim. Yeah?
Some of the Jews say it more than once, though. It says it in the beginning, when Moshe mm-hmm. first came to Paro, then by Arovo, so he met, Moshe mentioned the 3-day journey. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Right, that's over here. Yes. So I guess you'd say, until Arov, but it's difficult. Enough anami. Yeah.
So, by Gilam Melech Pat Mitzrayim, so that implies that there were messengers. How does one explain by Fich Levav Paro, that Paro had a role reversal, that he initially, it seems to be, Mashmal seems to be, that he initially was okay with the fact that they were leaving, but there was a hafacha, that there was a
yeah.
change of attitude.
Yeah, so that's a question, a very good question. Mineu Bei, how do you understand that pasuk? So one way to understand it is he had initially resigned himself to their leaving, even though he was hoping they would return as they had pledged, and then he changed his mind, or he was unsure, or the like. In other words, mm-hmm. there's some type of ambivalence, but it is clear, however you resolve that internal question within the pasuk, that he was under the impression that they might return. And again, I think Vayefich is probably referring to the fact that he had, to some degree, resigned himself to their leaving, and now he changed his mind and decided to pursue. Yes?
Not possible that he thought they were going completely, and then he changed his mind completely, just like by many of the mockers, he said that they would go, and then he said no.
So that's certainly possible, and I think it's a plausible explanation, again, that he initially said that they could leave forever, and then he changed his mind. The only difficulty with that explanation is Vayugad lemelech Mitzrayim ki varach ha'am, which means he received some new information. And if he had told them to leave forever, then how could that be explained? I think there are those that make suggestions along those lines, but again, they'll have to deal with the psukim, with the words Vayigad l'malach Mitzrayim ki varacha. Yes?
Well, it could be he never told the messengers that he actually thought they were leaving, that like the official government policy was that they were coming back, but he personally knew that they were going to go forever.
That's a possible answer. Yeah, I do think that this is a possible reading. I don't think it's the simplest reading, but it is possible that is the case. The fourth explanation I'd like to see with you is quoted in the Yalkut Perushim that's in the Mikros Gedolos Rav Paninim. And I saw this also in a Dvar Torah that Donnie Zuckerman sent me from Rabbi Semet. And he has a very fascinating explanation. His explanation is as follows. I remember when I was young and you know, we learned about the Revolutionary War. So you learn about the Red Coats and the Blue Coats, and you learn about how the British Army would wear bright red coats and stand out, and this made it, of course, very easy for the revolutionaries to hide in the forests and attack them. And there was no attempt to hide, camouflage, and the like. And they had a certain pride, and they said, you know, this is how we're going to fight war. We're going to fight war while wearing red coats, whatever exactly they thought. So it raises an interesting question, which is, how do you fight war? They had pride. They said, we're going to wear red coats even if it calls attention to ourselves. So this answer says that we asked for 3 days. Hashem told Moshe to request 3 days to teach Klal Yisrael an important lesson in terms of dealing with our enemies and fighting war. And that is that when you're engaged in a war, and it's a just war, it's legitimate, halachically, morally, ethically, etc., so then you play hardball. You don't have to be Mr. Nice Guy during a justified war. He writes, V'atan elchana na derech shloshes yamim, we're on the bottom of page 2, ki b'milchama muter lasos kol haramos v'tachbulos neged ha'oyev, af l'ramoso b'dvarim k'zavim. In war, you're allowed to deceive your enemy. In the books of Yehoshua and Shoftim, we find on many occasions that the Jewish people, when fighting their enemies, they would set up traps and they would ambush their enemies, and some people would go to the front and some people would go to the back, and all sorts of maneuvers of that sort. And you could say, "What? That's wrong. How could you ambush your enemy?" The answer is no. Ki b'milchama mutar lasos kol haramos v'tachbulos neged ha'oyev. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was teaching Klal Yisrael at this point how to fight war. They were essentially engaged in a milchama keneged Mitzrayim. What is the way in which we battle our enemies? We go ahead and we play hardball and we deceive them. And therefore, it's true. In this case, it wasn't really necessary because, after all, they were leaving supernaturally. They were leaving with Hashem's outstretched arm. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu's teaching them that, generally speaking, when warring with enemies, you don't necessarily have the same level of overt, miraculous intervention. And therefore, generally speaking, the appropriate way to fight your enemies is through maneuvers that might, in fact, mislead them. And that's okay. This is reminiscent of a concept that you see perhaps many places in Tanakh, that when you're dealing with someone who's duplicitous, then you can't always go ahead and let them take advantage of you. Perhaps the story of Yaakov is an illustration of this example, when he deals with Lavan, and he has all the shenanigans at the end with the spotted and the speckled sheep. Yaakov, who was even the person who personifies MS, was told by Malachim and understood that at a certain point, when you're dealing with someone who is trying to rip you off, in this case, Lavan, there are times that you have to play hardball back. And if you don't, then you'll never get what you're entitled to. And therefore, it was justified and appropriate for Yaakov to get his salary through the various schemes that he had with the spotted and the speckled and the sticks and the peelings and the like. And so, too, it was appropriate for Klal Yisrael to ask for 3 days or to borrow the kelim or even to mislead the Egyptians with the misleading route. So that is the fourth approach. The fifth approach that I'd like to see with you is really the most remarkable. And that's why I've left the most time to consider it. And this is an idea that is dealt with, which is the framework for this Mahalach is in Ibn Ezra, but it's really elaborated upon by the Ran and his drashos. The Ibn Ezra points out that the truth of the matter is all three instances of deception can be seen as aiming to arrive at Kriyas Yamsuf. Let's consider it. Why do they ask for 3 days? 3 days serves as an impetus for Paro to chase them after they've left. It's precisely because Paro expected them to return that he is motivated to run after them and chase them, which eventually brings about Kriyas Yamsuf. Had he assumed that they were going to go forever, he never would have left. As the Psukim say, Vayugad l'melech paro ki varacham, vayafeich levav paro. So it's precisely because he had expected them to return that he is motivated to chase them out, and eventually Kriyas Yamsuf results. Likewise, as a further motivation, Klal Yisrael borrow all these kelim, and now Paro owes them a lot. They owe the Egyptian people a lot of money, and this again serves to motivate the army and Paro to go ahead and retrieve their money, retrieve all of their borrowed kelim. So this too causes them to chase after the Jewish people, which any reasonable person would have seen as an act of sheer shtus. How could you go ahead and chase them after the 10 plagues? And finally, and this is of course explicit in the Psukim, the purpose of their deception in terms of returning towards Egypt so that Paro would think Nevuchim Hem Ba'aretz, that they're lost, the purpose of that was certainly to bring about Kriyas Yamsuf so that Paro would then go ahead and chase them into the desert and ultimately receive his termination at Kriyas Yamsuf. So that's the Ibn Ezra. Now, the Abarbanel objects to this answer because the Abarbanel says, well, if Hashem wanted to bring about Kriyas Yamsuf, he could have just hardened Paro's heart and made him go. And he does anyway. So what's the need for all these deceptions in order to bring about Kriyas Yamsuf? Just harden Paro's heart, and now we'll bring about Kriyas Yamsuf. There's no need for all these shenanigans. So the Ran addresses this, and let's read the Ran together. The Ran begins on page 3. The Ran begins by noting that there's a contradiction. When are we supposed to go? Till a quarter to or one?
One.
One? Okay, good. So the Ran begins that noting that there's an interesting stira in the Psukim. Not necessarily a stira, but at least a question. When Moshe Rabbeinu first goes to Bnei Israel and tells them, Pakod Yifkod Hashem Eschem, so it says, Vayayamein Ha'am, at the end of Parsha Shmos, that Klal Yisrael believed in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and that Moshe was his shliach. And then the Psukim tell us after Kriyas Yamsuf, what we just read, Vayaminu Bashem uveMoshe Avdo. Once again, Klal Yisrael believed. So the Ram says, what new is happening here? It sounds like there was something new. Now they believed. Until now they didn't believe, or they didn't fully believe. But that isn't true, because it says that even from the very beginning, they believe, Vayamein Ha'am. So what changed? So there are a lot of answers to this question. There's a beautiful Maral that talks about how there is a new type of emunah at Kriyas Yamsuf, and then yet a new type of emunah at Matan Torah, the Gam B'Chayamin U'Olam. But this is what the Ran answers. The Ran says that it's true. They initially believed. However, there were a lot of things that happened that undermined Moshe's credibility, that caused the Jewish people to question whether or not he was the legitimate messenger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What was that? What caused them to wonder about this? Among other things, it was the request for 3 days. Klal Yisrael gets all excited. Ah, this is a Shliach Hashem, what we've finally been waiting for. God is going to redeem us. And then Moshe goes ahead and says to Paro, we want to go for 3 days. But why? Like we asked from the very beginning, Hayad Hashem Tiktzar. If it was indeed the case that Moshe was the Shaliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why in the world is he asking for 3 days? In other words, the very same question that we asked on the Psukim, Klal Yisrael surely asked about Moshe Rabbeinu. So let's read inside. We're on page 3. We'll start with the paragraph of V'yesh Lomar Bazeh. V'yesh Lomar Bazeh, Shetekev Shasa Moshe Osos, Heminu Bo Emuna Gemura, Kemoshe Amar V'yamein Ha'am, Kilo Heminu Bo Yosef, B'kriyas Yamsuf Mimash, Heminu Bo, B'chol Ha'oso Shasa B'mitzrayim, Shekulam Hayu Yotzim Yitivo Shalolam U'min Hago. The basis of the additional belief at Kriyas Yamsuf was not because the splitting of the sea was somehow a greater miracle. That's not logical. A nace is a nace. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the ability to break the laws of nature during the 10 plagues, so then there's no additional chiddush that really took place in Kriyas Yamsuf, even if it was in a sense more grand. So then what happened? Avala davrazem evar harbi svekos gedolos v'noflos be'inyan yitzias mitzrayim. V'hu, shemetchila k'sha'asa ha'osos, heminu bo emuna shlema. Aval achar mikan ra'u be'neim dvarm shel teima shetzrichim lizbar. So initially they believed, and then they saw these astonishing things that undermined their belief. Rishona, sh'achar asher pakad Hashem es b'nei Yisrael, V'ratza latzilam miyad mitzrayim, ulahanchilam es haaretz, v'tziva Moshe shiomer zikne Yisrael, k'moshe amar lech vasavta zikne Yisrael, v'amart alihem v'gomer, pakodukan zikhem, v'omer v'eleschem miyani mitzrayim, v'gomer, elart v'as chalav v'as v'gomer, my time alibnov daito shal paro klal, shiomru lo, elokei avrim nikra elenu, v'atan elchana derech shlosh jamim, v'hinei zed derech avadim, she'ein yadam tkifa. The request for 3 days is the manner that slaves that have no power engage in. Shirotu levroach, umisnak lemesad al adonim levroach. V'lama Moshe v'Aaron shayushluche Hashem lo yomru el paro biyad rama. Shiagiach kitzam shal Yisrael yigael v'shelo yishtabe bohem od. Hayad Hashem tiktzar me'achni alibo shel paro lahodos hadavar gam ki yomru elav b'feirush. If they were legitimate shluchim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it made no sense to ask for 3 days. And therefore, the fact that they asked for 3 days indicated that Moshe and Aaron were not who they claimed to be. They were fakers, and therefore they had to engage in deception in order to leave. Hello. Imlo yaspiku b'zeser makos Yosef od aleim kaina, because if they were all, if after all they were leaving biyad Hashem, so if 10 makos wouldn't be enough, they'd do 20. V'zeh be'emes inyan shiroi shiyispak shiyisapku mimenu Yisrael b'shleimuso shamosha. V'af al pishaminu bo b'moshe b'tchila al piosos kemoshe amar v'yayamein ha'am shayolahem l'sapik imhu shaliach Hashem yizbarach kemoshe amarnu. Lama yare mehagid leparo adavar kemoshehu. V'zeh be'emes inyan sasum tzarech lizbar. So, firstly, Klal Yisrael questioned Moshe with his request for 3 days. V'afilu nidchok b'zeh v'nemar she'asa ken k'dei laharos koshi arpo shel paro. Right, that's the Abarbanel's answer. Shegam badavar akal yima'ein lishmoa b'dvar Hashem yisbarach adayin nishar lanu makom safe gadol b'amro. Daber nabel's name ami shalush me'esrei'ehu v'gol mer k'le chesev v'chle zahav v'zeb emes yira inyan zar. Oh, tamua me'od. Even if Klal Yisrael could understand the 3 days, like the Abarbanel, but why ask to borrow Caleb? Sha'afal pishan she Mitzrayim hayu chayavim lahem scharan shenishdabdu bahem kimo shamru b'sanhedrin. It's true, they were owed back wages for many, many years. Lo hayu ruyin lavu alem be'ikva uvidurachim shel anshe remia. Why, if they were all acting in the name of God, was it necessary to come be'akifin? Shafilu lo haisa yadim tkifa leim lo haya roi lasos kein. Even if they weren't powerful, this would have been inappropriate. V'kol shekein, acha sheyad Hashem yisbarach tkifa v'chazak aleim. Lo mahot zruch lasos kein. Ki im lo mar tenu lanu scharenu shenishtabadetem banu. They should have simply gone to Paro, gone to the Egyptians, and said, you owe us $10 billion for all of our work. Pay up. V'hare amru chachameinu. Al tikanes l'chatzar chavercha, litol shalcha shlo bershu shlo tira alav kiganav. Ela shvor eshinav. V'amor lo shalyani no tell. Right? If you're owed something, you could break his teeth and take it, but don't, you know, try to borrow and then keep it. V'chol elu advarim matmiim ba'atzmam v'roi shi'pol safek mitzidan Yisrael b'nevuaso shel Moshe. Aval heter elu shnei k'sharim hu davar echad. Shemidarkei Hashem yizbaruchu lahavi etzos me'rachok lahapil sonav bidino v'lakachas nikmaso mehem. So the Ran says, to answer these questions, we have to recognize a very important idea concerning the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. And that is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a plan. He has a goal. He has a purpose in history. And many of the ideas are etzos me'rachok. There are times, and here the Ran is telling us a yesod gadol when it comes to studying history or studying science or whatever it is, there are times that we are going to see perplexing, inexplicable phenomena. We don't understand why certain things happen in history. We don't understand why, if there's a just God and an all-powerful God, why such and such could happen. We're going to have kashas. And the answer is that there's a purpose. There's a goal. These are etzos me'rachok. There's a plan, and somehow or another, these fit into his plan. But we won't necessarily understand how. And it may very well be the case that we could not possibly conceive of any purpose, any reasonable explanation for certain things that happen. And that's exactly what happened here. There was no reasonable explanation for why they asked for 3 days and why they were asked to borrow the Kalim. And in fact, the Ran continues and he suggests that's pshat in the Medrash. The Pasuk says, Daber na ba'oznei ha'am. Moshe had to beg Klal Yisrael to borrow the Kalim. Eina ala lashon bakasha. Why did he have to beg them? Because they really didn't want to do this. Why not? Because it felt so low. It felt so misleading. Klal Yisrael felt, we don't want to have to ask to borrow. Let's demand our just payment. So Moshe had to beg Klal Yisrael, no, do this. And it's true you don't understand why. And there's no way you could understand why. But somehow or another, it fits into the plan. Not only that, the Ran suggests that it's possible that even Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know the purpose. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know why he had to ask for 3 days, and he didn't know why it was that he had to ask to borrow the kelim. These were mysteries even for Moshe. So he had to beg them. So what was the purpose? So skip to page 4. We'll start with the paragraph, the Kavanas. The Kavanas kol elu advarim haisa ne'lames mi Yisrael v'ulai gam mi Moshe ulesibas kol zeh ha'yaroi shiyisbeku Yisrael b'shlichuso shel Moshe af al pi sheminu bo b'tchila v'hu sheramaz v'amar v'yar Yisrael said agde lashes and zayim, right? Kilomar az hikiru shekom ma shehayu muflai mimenu tchila u'mistapkim bo lo haya rak lesavev shemitzriyim atzmam yichnesu l'mayim. It was only after Kriyas Yamsuf that everything made sense. Klal Yisrael at that point understood the reason for the request for 3 days. They understood the reason for the kelim. In fact, the Ran explains that's why before Kriyas Yamsuf, the Pasuk says that there was a very powerful wind that blew the whole previous day. Right? One could ask again, why undermine the miracle? Why was it necessary for this miracle to take place with a powerful wind? You should do it like in Universal Studios. You know, the sea splits. When I was young, we used to go on summer vacations with my family to Annapolis, Maryland, to the Chesapeake Bay. So one year, there was an offshore breeze for 5 days straight, and it pushed the water back hundreds of feet. You could walk onto the seabed for hundreds of feet. You saw how disgusting and dirty it was. And of course, on the eastern shore, there was flooding. I remember my neighbor, who seemed to be 100 years old, said, "This hasn't happened for 100 years. But the point is that wind is very powerful. Wind could actually push water. So it's true, it was nothing like Kriyas Yamsuf. But why undermine the miracle? Right? If the purpose of Kriyas Yamsuf is in order to show God's hand, to show his ability to miraculously intervene and break the laws of nature, so why undermine the miracle with the strong wind? Just make it happen instantaneously. The answer is the same, according to the Ran. To allow the Egyptians to run into the sea. And this answers the Abarbanel's question. The Abarbanel said, why was it necessary to do all these shenanigans, just harden Paro's heart? The answer is that the ultimate decision to enter the sea was done freely, the Ran says. It's true there were instances of intervention in hardening Paro's heart to bring him to this step. But it was Paro's choice to go into the sea. So, well, why is that so important? Right? Remember, everything is to bring about Kriyas Yamsuf. Well, why is Kriyas Yamsuf so important? We read at the beginning of this week's Parsha, Parsha's Yisro, that what inspired Yisro? Ki badavar shezadu alehem. Yisro is inspired by the fact that the Egyptians were ultimately destroyed in water. Remember, how did Mitzrayim attempt to wipe out the Jewish people? By throwing them in the water. And therefore, their ultimate downfall was brought about in the water. But it's not just regular midah keneged midah. There's something even more extraordinary here. Because they themselves walked into their own death trap. They volitionally and voluntarily entered the sea. They brought about their own destruction. The lesson of Kriyas Yamsuf is that if you choose evil, you will self-destruct eventually. That the choices you make will bring about your own demise. The choice that the Egyptian made to persecute the Jews, to throw the Jewish children into the water, was what eventually happened to them. And they brought it upon themselves because they decided to walk into the sea such that when the miraculous splitting ended, the water came crashing down on them. That was the lesson of Kriyas Yamsuf. And that is a lesson that inspired Yisroel to come and join the Jewish people. That is the lesson that we all learn from Kriyas Yamsuf. And it was such an important lesson that it was necessary all along for Klal Yisrael to mislead the Egyptians in order for that very important lesson to be taught. So what happened eventually was that all of the questions became resolved. Everything made sense. But that takes time. And that is the Nikuda that the Ran teaches us. That, as we mentioned before, there are mysteries, there are questions. People have things that they don't understand in history, tzaddik v'ralo, in theology, whatever it is, in science. And I don't think the Ran is saying that we shouldn't look for answers. The Ramban has a very interesting point that he makes in Shar HaGmul, where he talks about the issue of tzaddik v'ralo. And after spending many, many pages considering different solutions and interpreting the psukim from Iyov, so he says that the ultimate answer is that there are things that we're not going to understand. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Iyov. So the Ran says, well, if that's the answer, if we're not really going to be able to understand it, so why are you troubling me with all of these pages and pages and pages of explanations? Why don't you just say from the very beginning that there are things that we can't understand? And the Ramban says, Zu taina saksilim, moaseh achachma. That is the taina of fools who hate wisdom. The Chacham goes ahead and tries to understand everything he could understand. And there's a lot that we can understand. There's a mitzvah of Yediyas Hashem. And that demands of us to try our best to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And even though we know that ultimately we can never fully understand, and there are going to be things that are going to be beyond us, by definition, that shouldn't tell us not to start. But at the same time, it should also remind us that when we reach a point where we can go no further, when we have a kasha to which we have no answer, so that is where Emunah begins. Klal Yisrael learned at Kriyas Yamsuf that we have to have trust and faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And trust means that there will be times, there will be situations, there will be experiences which we can't explain. And at that point, we should remember that there is a plan and there is a purpose and there is a reason. And one day, we hope very soon, we'll know the answers to all our questions. Have a good day. Thank you.